You're listening to The Morning Rush with Bill Carroll on News Talk 580 CFRA.
906, good morning. Welcome back. We have Premier Doug Ford on the line, so let's get straight to it. Good morning, Premier.
Good morning, Bill. How are you today?
I'm okay. I'm probably better than you are. I've been thinking about you a lot over these past couple of months. We've known each other a long time, and congratulations on the way you're handling this. I think you've been level-headed and smart and listening to the right people, and people are appreciating that. And I know you must be working very long days and nights, and don't even know if this is what you signed up for, but here you have it. So thank you for doing all of that.
Well, I appreciate that, Bill, and thank you, and thank you the media for getting the message out. And I want to thank the people of Ontario. They're the ones that are the reason why we're seeing a flattening of the curve, and especially the Ottawa region as well. The people of Ottawa have done an incredible, incredible job. We're seeing some real positive results when it comes to the modeling in the public domain. We're dealing with two worlds here, Bill. We're dealing with the long-term care, which is not in good shape right now. We're throwing every resource we have at it. And then you look at the public domain, and everyone's doing a great job. It's flattening, and we just have to hang in there a little longer and continue doing what we're doing. But Ottawa stands out from any other big urban area in the province in a real positive way.
Yeah. I think a lot of people are glad that our leaders are listening to the scientists, to the healthcare professionals. But in the end, the decision about how and when we try to go back to something that resembles normal is going to rest on the shoulders of people like you. And I would hope this is probably the biggest decision you will have to make in your lifetime. Does that hang heavily over you that when you open up the economy, it does increase the risk? And what's the manageable amount of risk? How are you even going to come to terms with that?
Well, first of all, we rely on the health and science. That's the number one priority, to make sure people are safe. And once we get the green light, we turn on the economy in a trickle, and then we measure it. But once we do that, even as the economy starts moving forward, when that time comes, unfortunately, Bill, there's still going to be people that are going to be passing away in long-term care. It's a terrible, terrible virus that attacks the most vulnerable, the most elderly, people over 80. And that's why it's so important. If you have a loved one, a father, grandfather, grandmother, mother, just keep them, I hate to say it, but keep them locked down. Keep them locked down and self-isolating as long as possible.
How far along are you in the planning to reopen the economy? Do you have a sort of an overall sketch that it will open gradually, and which businesses might come first? Or do you see it as a series of rotating opening and closings, some more local shutdowns? Do you have a sort of a sketch in your mind yet that you're going to go by?
Well, we have a whole team together that are putting together a framework, which we should be rolling out over the next few days. But even when we do a framework, our biggest fear and the public's biggest fear is a spike again, or it comes back and for a second wave. And that's what keeps me up at night. But we have to just continue social distancing and self-isolation as long as possible. But we've done such an incredible job in the public domain, everyone across the province, all 14.5 million people, and they're the reason why we're seeing a little bit of success on flattening the curve.
You were talking yesterday about even your nephews pressuring you. Am I going to get to go to camp this year? And when I announced that you were going to be on the show, you believe me, I got a lot of emails. Ask the premier about this business, that business, this. Everybody wants to know. So I'm just going to try to go bigger picture. I'm looking at the results of a Dart poll, and you can see that Ontarians are feeling more confident about their health and safety. That's a good thing.
Yes.
But more concerned about the economy.
You're right.
And about their mental health, about getting the kids back to school, all of those things. So as we get closer to summer, we get to the May 24th weekend, the pressure is going to be on for people to want to do more and more things. Do you see us by then having a little more freedom to be social than we are today?
Well, if we continue down the road we're going publicly, yes. We can see things loosening up a little bit. And I understand, Bill, people want hope. And even with my 12-year-old nephew, that's important to these kids. They're highlight of their summer is going to summer camp, and it just goes to show you everyone has a concern, no matter how old or they are. They want to get out there. I think a lot of people are getting cabin fever. And then we're dealing with two different areas. We're dealing with the urban communities, and then we're dealing with rural areas. And one of my MPPs, Northwest, said to me, well, in a 300-mile radius, we have like six cases. And everyone's saying, you know, it's not fair that we have to close and because of Toronto, per se. And I understand that. And we'll take that into consideration. But within the supply chain, when you open up, it affects everyone right across the province. It takes one person to head up north and start infecting people if they have COVID. And that's what we want to try to avoid. It's a happy balancing act, and it's a tough decision, but we rely on our health table, and we also rely on the people and communities. I was on the phone yesterday with Mayor Watson, other mayors throughout the province, getting their input. And I have to give a shout out to a few people. And you know, the chief medical officer of health in Ottawa is just, I think, is doing an incredible job. We have our four MPPs, Goldie Gamari and Lisa McLeod and Jeremy Roberts, along with Mary Lee Fullerton, and they're all working extremely, extremely hard. And I know Mary Lee, being the Minister of Long-Term Care, she doesn't sleep at night, and she's doing everything we possibly can to put that iron ring around the long-term care.
Yeah, and we always feel selfish, right, when we think about, well, I'd like to get out of the house, I'd like to do things. Meanwhile, our relatives, our loved ones, are in danger in long-term care facilities. So I get that it's difficult. I heard you say, for example, somebody asked you about fishing. You know, summer's coming. Will people be allowed out onto the waters and enjoy fishing? That's an activity you can do alone. The problem, of course, that means you have to open up boat launches. And if you open up boat launches, you need marinas to open, to repair. Right. There's a domino effect. So have you started to come to terms with which of those leisure activities might be safe enough to resume?
You know something, Bill, you're 100% right, and I keep saying it. As soon as you pull one trigger, no matter what decision you make, it affects 10 other triggers
down
the road. But right now, you can go fishing as long as you keep your distance. And if you're on shore, what we don't want to see is people stacked up side by side. But it's a pretty independent sport, and if they can do it and practice social distancing, that's fine. But over the next little while, a very short period, we're bringing a few things to Cabinet tonight, and we'll make some decisions there. And every week we'll be measuring. And the better we get, the more we'll be able to loosen up on the requirements on the essential closures.
I know you're not ready to introduce exactly which model you're going to use and how it's going to work, and I understand that. I don't expect you to break it here. But many of the models we see say that if you're going to open up even gradually, you need to be able to test people very quickly. You want to test people often to know that it's safe. And you need to be ready, have the public health officials in line so that they can track individual cases when they pop up so they don't become outbreaks, so that we don't get another spike.
That's right.
Is that mechanism well underway? Do you feel like we're far enough down the road that we can start to see those mechanisms come to play in the following weeks or months?
We have. We've seen a tremendous increase over the last week with testing. We've jumped up over 9,000 tests almost every single day. Our goal over the next few days is going to be up to 14,000 consistently day after day. And then another part to testing is contact tracing, making sure that you follow up and trace where they ended up getting COVID until we can track it as well. And we're doing that right now based on postal codes. And you can see the hot spots throughout the province. A lot of the hot spots are around Toronto and the greater Toronto area. And it stands out like a lit up Christmas tree when you look at the map. So what that does, it allows us to bring in resources and do more testing in that area. Also on the education side, making sure that we keep people informed. In Toronto and in my area, for example, there's a lot of families that It's not their fault. They're living multiple families in a home, I guess, to save money. That's where we see the hot spots happening when there's congregate living, and that's the toughest part. That's just the way some families live, and it's again, it's not their fault, but we really have to focus on those areas.
You mentioned education, so I'll ask you one last one, and I'll let you go because I'm sure you have another one of these kinds of interviews lined up. There's a great debate going across the world about schools. Are they the kids the first to go back, or are they the last? It's hard to go back to work if your kids aren't in school. And there's another dilemma, right? Another catch-22 there. In your modeling, do you see children going back to school early on in the process or later in the process?
Well, I think it'd probably be later on. Our biggest fear is to make sure this doesn't spread, especially within our schools, and I know our kids are resilient, but still, my number one concern is protecting our kids out there, and we're going to have an announcement in the coming days, so we'll have a better idea where we're going on the education file. I know the minister is going to come out over the next few days and make an announcement.
So that be sort of the final decision or another delay of...
No, I don't think it'd be the final decision, but it'll give... people a little more certainty on where we're going, and I've been using the word hope. People want to see hope out there. They want to see there's going to be a time that they get out and they'll be able to go back to work safely, and that's our number one concern. There's no one out there, Bill, that wants to turn this economy on more than I do, but in saying that, I have to make sure we protect the health and welfare of the people in Ontario here.
Thank you, Premier. I'll let you go back to work.
Thanks so much. Thanks, okay. Bill. All the best.
Not that talking to us isn't part of his job. It is part of the work, but glad he made time for us this morning. There you go. I couldn't get all the questions in, obviously, but I kept them over time already, so there's probably some other radio or TV station saying, curse that Bill Carroll, keeping him on longer. It's 9:18, the morning rush. Good morning. I'm Bill Carroll. Coming up next, it's COVID-19 Heroes with broadcaster Gene Velitis. Don't go anywhere.
And now, COVID-19 Heroes.
Tom Bourne just wanted me to clarify, by the way, they can come and get your irrigation system back up and running for the spring as well. So, because those things aren't working properly, they could freeze up in the winter and then they leak and cause damage to your foundation. Now you have to have more workers come in and fix that. So they're doing that kind of stuff as well. So there you go. It's nice to see somebody get back to work. He said this morning, that's thousands of jobs in Ottawa. He's the biggest. Over 100 people there alone. So that's great. Back to work safely. Those are easy ones. People out there working alone, no contact with other human beings. Why not? I don't care if you're selling paper monkeys. If you can do it safely, we should let you open. That's where, right?
Definitely.
I mean,
it's
not just
working.
About, because if you're essential, you're probably already working. So now we're going to the next most essential. But part of that formula has to be, yeah, but who could do it really safely? Whether it's essential or not, why would you stop someone from coming to cut your grass? Not in contact with another human being. If they can make the money and you did, why not? Senior citizen can't cut their own grass. Let them do it. I don't have a problem with that at all. I know someone did earlier. I don't get that. Don't be mad because someone else can go back to work. Be happy as many people can go back to work as possible, because the more people who work, the more your job will be around for you, whatever you do when you get back to work. People aren't working and your restaurant reopens, but they can't afford to eat in your restaurant. You may not have a job anyway. So let's not be like that. Let's not be envious here. Get everybody back to work that we can. All right. COVID-19 Heroes broadcaster Gene Velitis. Good morning, Gene.
Good morning, Bill. I, up until this point, was unaware that the paper monkey manufacturers of the Ottawa Valley were such an important industry.
They've been sitting at home, paper going uncut, monkeys being unmade. It's terrible.
Hey, listen, Bill, I've got three very, very nice stories this morning. But before I get to that, you know, just off the top of my head here, and I don't want to be political about this at all, but isn't our Premier Doug Ford one of the great local heroes? There was a fantastic article about the Premier and other Canadian leaders in the Washington Post, of all newspapers, this past weekend. And you know what? He does interviews. He's working. He picks up masks with his pickup truck without telling his staff. And again, don't you know, send me something on Twitter. This isn't about politics. I think our premier has really risen to the occasion. He really is one of our local heroes. You have to give the guy credit.
Don't disagree at all.
Yeah. Well, let's talk about some other local heroes. A group of Ottawa medical students is raising money to help feed workers in the industry that they're hoping to enter one day. It's called Frontline Feeds Ottawa Gatineau. It's a fundraising campaign. You can help them out. They're on the GoFundMe platform. What they're doing is they're buying meals from restaurants and they're donating them to workers in hospitals and long-term care homes experiencing all the outbreaks of C-19. Now, one of the campaign organizers, a guy by the name of Danielle Millad, was on CTV Morning Live with our pal Leslie this morning, and he was explaining that the students want to find a way to give back while they're finishing their studies. It all started with three medical students organizing from home because they were in medical school, but they were sent home. They want to give back. In the first couple of days, they raised $6,000. And it's really great because they go to local restaurants, and local restaurants are bleeding financially. So they're helping them out. They're buying the food, and then they're taking it to hospitals and long-term care homes to help feed those people who are working more than 12, 13, 15, 16 hours a day. So we think that's great. You can check them out on the GoFundMe page, and it's called Frontline Feeds Ottawa Gatineau. Meanwhile, a school board here in the Capitol, they're collecting all the 3D printers that are in storage now in schools because they're closed, and they're helping more frontline staff during the C-19 pandemic. So staff members of the Ottawa Catholic School Board are now at the school board's headquarters, and they're using basically a makeshift print shop to produce hundreds of headbands for face shields and mask clips and other medical equipment that the frontline people need. Then they ship them off to the University of Ottawa, and we talked about this initiative a couple of weeks ago. The University of Ottawa finishes them all off, and then they send them off to hospitals, and there are things like laser-cut clear face shields and other items that the long-term care facilities and the hospitals need. So, you know, small little things, they all add up. And I know this is in Ottawa, but I really love this story. A guy in Napanee is now making it easier for students to learn comfortably. He's refurbishing old laptops. Guy's name is Dave Alford, and he understands that a lot of parents don't have the money or the luxury to buy their kids laptops. So he put the word out in the Napanee area. He has received 40 old laptops and iPads that people are no longer using. He's fixing them all up and then giving them away to kids in the local community so they can get online and start learning. So just these all little things, people doing that extra, going that extra mile, you know what? Collectively, it all helps out. And they are truly local heroes. I just love what people are doing.
It's amazing. And, you know, the great thing, and a lot of us are learning this right now, if you didn't already know it, when you help other people, you help yourself too. Like, because it's easy to get despondent in this environment. You stay home and you just worry and you're bored and you're scared and you're worried about your job, all that stuff. You're out there helping other people. It's a good distraction for you and good for your mental health as well. Nothing makes you feel better than putting a smile on another human being's face. That's why we invented COVID-19 Heroes, and thanks to you for doing that every day.
And Bill, just a quick little note here. We have that great story about the student from Alta Vista Public School writing the note to the food bank, donating $33, which led a union a local downtown to donate $3,000. So our friends at CTV picked up on that. If you go to the CTV Ottawa site this morning, you can see the letter that I was talking about yesterday from this student at Alta Vista. Just a really, really great thing from a student in public school. Bill, stay safe. We'll talk to you tomorrow.
Look forward to it. Gene Vilaitis, COVID-19 Heroes, 928. Richard Krause, Netflix is getting hotter. How's that possible? Wow. We'll talk about that coming up after the news. It's The Morning Rush. Good morning. I'm Bill Carroll.
You're listening to The Morning Rush with Bill Carroll on News Talk 580 CFRA.
934. Are you tired of Netflix yet? I think I've actually seen literally everything on Netflix. Somebody suggested a new show to me, a British police thing.
Yeah.
And I went to find it, and it's gone. And I'd seen that show. It's a female police officer, middle-aged woman. forget what it's called, but I've seen that show 50 times pop up as a promo. I was sort of tempted to watch it because I like those British police shows. So I finally decided I'm going to watch it, and it's gone. It's a Netflix original, and it's gone. So then I went to Apple TV, and I bought the first episode, and it was kind of so-so. I might have watched it on Netflix, and maybe it gets better.
Right.
I would have gotten into it, but I'll never know. 16 million new global subscribers. More or less, not quite entirely, but since the start of the pandemic. 16 million. Begs the question, you didn't have Netflix before? Dart and Maru Blue did a poll of the people who are already watching. What are you more likely to watch? So these are people who are watching content. Now, some people, I don't know who these people are, but they just never watch anything on TV. They don't do that. They just sit around and read books, and good for them. We've done some of that too, but Netflix is by far the most popular. 62% say if they're watching anything, it's going to be Netflix. Broadcast TV is doing okay too as well. 58%. 43% YouTube. That's my kids. It's just nonstop YouTube. Prime Video, 28%. Disney Plus is 19%. Apple TV, 5%. Other, 15%. So, and we look for humor. Might be explain why I'm watching Schitt's Creek. Desperation.
Definitely.
I really want to laugh.
That's why I'm watching, I can't remember, but I'm watching a comedy too.
I've never been more averse to really depressing movies now. Like, I'm not watching any French movies. They're always so depressing. Richard Krause, our movie guy, is on the line. How are you doing, Richard?
Good, Bill. How are you?
Hard to imagine you could watch more content, but are you?
We are watching a little bit more. I mean, we're digging a little deeper. I'm still reviewing movies. This week there's five new movies that I have to see that will be out on VOD, and I'll tell you all about them on Friday. But we're watching some series that kind of got away from us when they first came out, like Goliath on Amazon Prime with Billy Bob Thornton.
We call it Goliath.
Goliath, yeah, that's right. We are
the French brand, Goliath.
We
that
are,
starts out great.
I loved the first season. Second season's okay. We're starting the third now.
Yeah, you're not going to like it, Richard.
Yeah, I'll let you know. The first show didn't really grab me, but my fingers are crossed for that. And we watched The Marvelous Mrs. Maisel, which I had been hearing about for years, but it almost just seemed like a lot of work to watch it because there's so many episodes.
Me and too, and Matt it begged me to watch this thing for a year. And I thought, I don't know, the only thing less funny than a stand-up comic on TV, great if you're in the room. Yeah. The only thing less funny than that is going to be an actress pretending to be a stand-up comedy. And yet, it's fantastic, isn't it?
It is fantastic, and I couldn't get enough of it. We binged that one almost a little too quickly. You know, we really, really got into it. We were taking our lunch breaks because we're both working from home in our, quote, separate offices, i.e. the dining room table and my office here. And we were taking, like, proper lunch breaks and sitting down and watching an episode and then, you know, filling in at night, watching two or three in a row. And it's fantastic. So all the accolades, all the Emmys, all the Golden Globes, it's won. Worth it. If you haven't seen it, find it on Amazon Prime. It's really great. And Rachel Brosnahan, who plays Mrs. Maisel, is fantastic.
Kind of hard to, I mean, I was sort of neutral about her in the beginning. If you're not in love with her by episode four, you're just not alive.
Absolutely. She's
so likable, right?
Well, it's so likable, and it's a character that's about resilience. It's a character that's about optimism. For me, it's about show business in the 1960s in New York City. It's all this stuff that I love, all wrapped up into one big glittery kind of package. I don't know why I avoided it for the first couple of seasons, but I'm glad that I'm back. Although now we're going to have to wait probably at least a year for them to come back with season four.
Okay, tell me if I'm wrong, but it feels to me like the movies, maybe some of the ones you've been reviewing, that are going straight to video on demand. I feel like they're holding back the good ones. Every week I tune in, I'm excited, and then they turn out to be pretty crappy.
Well, they're holding back the giant ones. You know, the James Bonds and the Fast and Furious and all those movies, the Marvel movies, you're not going to see those go to VOD, frankly, because they're too expensive.
Yeah.
A movie that costs $200 million to make is just not going to make its money back on VOD in the same way that it could in theaters. And that is immutable. That is
even if it means holding it back for over a year, because it could be that long before we all sit together crowded into a theater.
Yeah, I know. I'm seeing more and more. I get every notice for every movie that's been changed from the schedule, because what happens here, just so I can do my job, is I have a spreadsheet that tells me when everything is coming out. And it's detailed, and it is lengthy, and it is my Bible. That is what I go by so that I can make sure that I'm seeing the things that I need to see. And it has changed now. It is essentially just an empty document right now with titles that are now being scheduled for 2021. So that's all the notices that I'm getting now. Things are moving way, way, way out of this release window. And so when we look at what's on VOD, these are generally speaking smaller films that are dramas, they're character-based, there's not a lot of explosions, there's, you know, a lot of horror movies are getting releases. Horror movies do really well on VOD. A lot of those are coming out, like Blood Quantum next week and the remake of David Cronenberg's Rabid, which I'll tell you about next week, that's pretty good. So, you know, there's a lot of smaller stuff and maybe some esoteric stuff that's coming out, but there's some very good, really good movies that are on VOD. You just have to kind of know where to find them. It's not as easy as just looking in one space and going, okay, here's the list of things that are going to be on VOD, because you have to kind of look, oh, what's on Amazon Prime? What's on iTunes? It's all over the place. So it can be hard to track these things down.
Then I have to go to Richard Krause's website, see what you said about it, decide whether or not I'm going to watch it, and then I find another one. I go back to your web. It's a lot of back and forth. You'll give out that website in a minute, too, by the way.
I will.
All
indeed.
Your reviews are there. Then you get the other, and I guess these are probably the beneficiaries. Movies that kind of stiffed at the box office,
yep,
that I would never have seen even on demand, just because it was so badly reviewed, that you give a shot at. The other one, I'll give you an example. This week, we watched The Rhythm Section. Now,
right,
I thought it was going to be about guys like Paul McCartney and Ringo, you know, bass and the drums.
Yeah.
It's not a music movie. It's sort of a story about how an assassin is born.
It's a thriller. Yeah, and I think it was meant to be the beginning of a franchise for Blake Lively.
Not meant to be. It was clearly. She walks away at the end and is like, where's she going now? I can't wait to see the next one. Except that she got to the end. I'm thinking, okay, I hope I never see this character again. And she's very charming. She's very watchable. She can look very different. I think she's compelling, but something about that movie does not work.
No, she's the best thing in that movie. And it didn't work. And I heard all sorts of stories about why it didn't work, that it was taken away from the director and recut by the producers and, you know, whatever. All the stories that you hear, the sort of Hollywood horror stories. Bottom line is, the thing that we saw in the theaters wasn't very good. But on VOD, you know, if you can rent it for $3 or $4, it'll eat up part of an afternoon, I suppose. But there are good movies out there. You don't have to watch The Rhythm Section. There are things out there that recently that I've reviewed that have been quite good. You know, Love, Wedding, Repeat was all right. She Never Died is good. The Rosie is really good. This week, there's a movie for kids called The Willoughbys. I'll tell you about it. It's an animated film on Netflix. It's good. Selah in the Spades on Amazon Prime is a cool little movie about, like, literally gangsters in a high school and in an upscale private school. And it's a lot of fun. It's a really cool little movie. And, again, it's the kind of movie that will probably benefit from being on a platform like Amazon Prime.
I couldn't keep up with you. I want all of those suggestions for the kids who are going out of their minds a little bit and looking for good content. You know what? I sat down to have the kid. I thought they'd love it. Wendy, which is a retelling of the Peter Pan story.
Mm.
And I read that it wasn't great. The reviewers are saying it's visually beautiful. I don't know if you've seen it, but looked like it was shot on an iPhone. It's not visually beautiful. It's a stupid story. And Magalie, who loves Richard Krause, and she was an infant, when you'd come to our house, she'd just stare at you. She's a clever kid. You know what she said to me? We're about 15 minutes in. She said, I feel like these people need a problem.
He understands that you have to have drama. You got to have friction in order for there to be drama. I love that.
She was right. Like, there's no pirate chasing them here. It's just like a kid's dream. And it was it was really kind of lame. But she was right. They were characters in need of a problem. That was the most entertaining part about the movie. One more thing about Netflix, since we're talking about it, I want to gripe, okay?
Okay.
I don't know how Netflix looks on whatever device you watch it on.
Mm-hmm.
And I have two different Apple TVs. I have an older one and a newer one, and they look a little different. On the newer one, the trailers sort of trigger automatically when you hover over the
right.
the name of the TV show or the movie. Okay, the other one, the older one, doesn't do that. But could they please separate the foreign language ones? And I know they're trying to sneak them in, mm-hmm. but nothing bothers me more than to get excited about something. I turn it on, and 2 minutes in, I'm thinking, am I drunk or are the lips not lining up with the really bad announcer booth acting, the voiceover acting I'm watching here, like some Japanese cartoon?
Get ready for a lot more of that. There was a movie that they released called School Life that was really good. It's a cool school drama about a teacher. I told you about it a couple of weeks ago, about a teacher who goes to a school just outside of Paris and actually cares about the students and tries to change their lives. And it's hard to watch, though, because of the dubbing. The dubbing just wasn't good enough. And there was that. There's a show called Money Heist, which, by and large, the dubbing is okay, but it's not great. But Netflix here, in order to keep feeding this beast, the longer that this goes on and the longer that production is shut down, they've got to feed the beast. They've got to keep that new releases bar that they have. They've got to keep that refreshed as much as possible. So they're
but I'm not eating your stale cookies. You're not fooling me with your stale cookies.
Well, they're
just getting mad.
They're taking good foreign shows, and because you can dub them remotely, if you've got actors with a decent microphone at home, you can dub them. So there's going to be a point at which a lot of their new programming, and I'm putting new in quotation marks here, will be direct from working from someone's home dubbing these foreign shows. So there'll be a lot
that's
more
how it already looks. And it's not good. I'd rather subtitled than dubbed. I don't know about you, but rather subtitled.
Yeah.
And that's fine, but also even there warned me, because they run the trailer. Now I'm starting to figure it out. Oh, I heard voices, but I never saw the actor speak in the trailer. It's usually some voiceover mixed in with action sequences. And right, that's when I start to get suspicious. And then you look at the names and go, yeah, I can't pronounce any of the names of these people. Too bad. It might be a great movie, but don't dub it. I can't. My wife grew up in Quebec watching Hollywood movies dubbed into Quebec French. So it doesn't bother her as much. But for me, it's appalling.
Yeah, a lot of it is just so poorly done, and I can only imagine that they're trying to do it quickly now to as I say, Netflix, because they've got this opportunity. Netflix was losing some market share before all this happened, and I think now what they see is, after a kind of disastrous award season where I think that they thought that they were going to win everything during award season for Marriage Story and The Irishman, couple of other titles that they had out, and they ended up winning very little, and it didn't give them that kind of prestige that they were hoping to get, and the bump, more importantly, the bump in subscribers they were hoping to get. Now all this is happening. They've got 16 million new subscribers, global subscribers. Their market share is way up. Things are going well, and they don't want to blow it, so they're going to give you new material one way or the other, and I have a feeling that it's going to be dubbed. A lot of it in the next few months, it's going to be dubbed material.
Yeah. Well, this explains why Netflix invented a virus in a Chinese lab. So we'd all have COVID-19 and we'd watch more of their product. Thank you, Richard. We'll talk to you on Friday.
Absolutely, Bill. Thanks.
Richard, before you go, give us your website so people can see your reviews of some of these movies that are popping up now.
It's Richard Krause, C-R-O-U-S-E, all one word, richardkrause.ca.
Thanks, Richard.
Thanks, Bill.
RichardKrause.ca. It's 9:49. The Morning Rush, Trips, Clips. Leslie Roberts standing by.
Ottawa is open for business.
Good morning, Ottawa. It's 8:23. If you know a local company that's trying to survive and being creative in these interesting and difficult times, email us, morningrush@cfra.com, and we will track them down and feature them on this segment, which we're doing as a purely public service. That's all. Some of them have interesting news value anyway, but we're just trying to help, doing whatever we can. MorningRush@CFRA.com is the place to reach us. Don't forget, the Premier is going to be on the show at 9:05 today. Premier Doug Ford is joining us. I know he's starting to look at plans to get the province reopened. Doesn't want to rush it, but we'll have a conversation with him. Annalise Plant is with a company called AllSleep. Local business. They manufacture 100% Canadian-made travel sleep masks. Well, I know no one's traveling anywhere. How are they open for business? Well, they got creative, and Anne is on the line with us right now. Good morning.
Hi, how are you?
Great. That's got to be a devastating time when you're related to the travel industry and no one's traveling. You must be you must have spent the first couple of days thinking, I'm done, I'm finished. What was that like when you saw the world start to shut down?
Well, we listen to our customers. That's what we do best here. And people were telling us, can you do something to help? So we tried to see, we're a small business, so we were quick on our feet, and we made a prototype to make a face mask, hygienic, washable face mask to help our customers.
Well, how big a pivot is that for you? How much do you have to change the way you make masks to go from a face mask that covers your eyes to one that covers your mouth?
Well, the base is pretty much all the same. You just need to change the sewing you do on it. And that's really what we do best here. We listen and we try to implement it as quick as we can. So we were able to put the product up in less than 24 hours on our website.
Boy, that's fast. Now, you know your business. Far be it for me to tell you how to do it. You did remember to not leave eye holes or anything, right? You got just a...
What, Terry?
Oh, I guess you wouldn't have eye holes in a sleep mask, would you?
No, you don't.
Yeah. Now, I'm looking at you with a photograph of this. Did you got to change the shape of the mask too, though, right? Because a mask that goes over your eyes would be, it's sort of shaped with teardrops on it, you know, to cover your cheekbones. Mm-hmm. This one that bulges out in the front to make room for your nose and stuff. It looks like a very different mask. You could just 24 hours. That amazes me.
Yeah, people, when they're traveling, we're already working on prototypes, because in an airplane, all the air is recycled. So people wanted to, our clients asked us if we could make a face mask for when they travel, needed to be comfortable, needed to be washable. So we already had a prototype we were working on, so that's why it went so quickly. But the thing is, if you're wearing a face mask on the plane and you're going to Japan, it's a long time that you're having it on your face. So our face mask is actually adjustable behind the neck and on top of the head. So it doesn't go around your ears. Because that's when you get sore, you get bruises. If you wear it for a long period of time, it's not ideal. It's not the most comfortable. So that's the big difference with our face mask, is that it's more comfortable. And we all know, now people wear it to go to the grocery store, and the lines are, you're there for hours. So you need to be comfortable at all times with it.
Well, yeah, and it looks like when we start to open the economy, face masks are going to be a big part of everyday life. If you're going to go to work or use transit, or I think we're all going to be wearing these masks for months and months to come. So to make them comfortable and reusable is excellent. How do they fasten? It looks like, is it Velcro? They don't look like they're tied or buckled.
No, actually, it's not Velcro, because when you wash it, it gets all dirty and it's not ideal. So it's actually adjustable behind the head with D-rings. And you just have two strings at the back of the neck, so you can just tie it in a bow.
Oh, so like when you put on a bicycle helmet or something, the little ring that moves back and forth.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, okay.
We all know no one has the same head shape, so everyone needs to be able to adjust it to what they're most comfortable.
Yeah, I would need some very long straps, disproportionately large head.
We got you covered. Don't worry.
All right. Do they come in different colors, styles, shapes?
Only one color, one style, and as I said, adjustable, so everyone can make it efficient on their face.
The color looks like in this photo to be black. That's
exactly.
So just comes in black. Black is the new black, so that'll be fun.
Exactly.
It's going to make me look a little pale with my Scottish white skin, but that's okay. Now, how many people do you employ?
But we have a really small team. We're about... 5, 6.
Hey, and that's five or six people who didn't lose their jobs. That's incredible.
Exactly. And
how many a week?
10,000 masks a week. Incredible. And we've been doing this for 2 months now. And it's all made here in Gatineau, Ottawa. So it doesn't take long for shipping. It doesn't take long to make them. So we're really quick. That's what people want. People are scared. So we try to be as efficient as possible.
You're from Gatineau. I never would have guessed. Never would have guessed. So how do I get one? Because I don't have a mask yet. And people are starting to look at me like I'm the bad guy going to the grocery store without it. So how long does it take to get it, and how do I get it to my house?
Yeah, it's allthesleep.ca. It's free shipping, and it's with the Canada Post, it's under less 10 business days.
Okay. Did you say all asleep or all sleep?
All asleep.
So A-L-L-A?
S-L-E-E-P.
Yeah, because Matt wrote all sleep here, but...
Of course I did. I'm sorry.
He's not good with French-Canadian accents, which does not go well for him because he lives with a French-Canadian woman from Montreal, so...
Bella, you need to get better.
She actually sounds like your girlfriend, doesn't she?
A little bit, I gotta say. Okay.
Her accent's closer to your girlfriend, who's... By the way, this is Anne. This is how incestuous we are here. He's dating my wife's cousin.
Oh, my... So everyone is tangled. Okay, I see.
Yeah. But your accent is more similar to his girlfriend than to my wife. That's just to my ear. So that's, anyway, you got it wrong, Matt. It's all asleep.
Yeah.
.com.
.ca.
Okay, and how much?
It's $14.95.
Thank you, and good luck. Good for you
Have
for finding a way to keep going.
Thank you. Stay safe.
And Lise Plante. From allasleep.ca. Canada Post can get that to you in 10 days. If not, I'll complain to my wife. She'll make that happen. It's 8:30. Good morning. It's the Morning Rush.
Wake up in the morning with News Talk 580 CFRA. Now on your smart speaker. You're listening to the Morning Rush with Bill Carroll on News Talk 580 CFRA.
It's easy to say open, open, open until we get a second wave of this, and it bites us on the backside.
Wow, look at that. We're using a soundbite from yesterday and not one from our own show an hour ago. Come on, guys. Premier was on the show an hour ago. Let's turn some of that audio around. What are we doing here? I thought he said a couple of interesting new things. We're getting a better idea of what the plan is and what the rollout is going to be. You could kind of feel it about what the priorities are going to be. Really interesting. Leslie Roberts is in the room.
Yeah.
Really interesting, Leslie, that he seems to be in the camp of schools come later, not earlier.
Yeah.
Because that's been a raging debate, right? Do you send the kids out first? They're the least vulnerable, but they also could be the biggest spreaders. But if they don't go to school, how do the parents go to work? They need to. So that, but he's leaning towards later, not earlier, in the process of gradually opening.
And he's not counting the school year yet.
No, definitely not. In fact, he said that the education minister in the next day or two will have, it sounded like a pretty substantial announcement. And I pushed him a bit on it and said, well, one that will be the final decision. He said, not the final decision, right, but it should give people some clarity.
May long weekend, some things may change. Is that the target date I heard, take away from the interview this morning?
We didn't get specific about it. It feels like it's coming pretty soon.
Nice.
But not next week. But yeah, I'm feeling like the end of May, early June is we're going to start to see some things loosening up. So he was talking optimistically about things like boating and fishing and all those things.
Wouldn't that be nice?
We'll get to start up. So, yeah, you know, golf, as long as you can socially distance.
Yeah. Golf is something that a lot of people are lobbying for as well, because you can social distance while playing golf. No carts, but carry your bag.
Yeah. Not that I care about people who can afford to join a golf club particularly.
There's some public ones too, Bill.
For sure.
Yeah.
But they create jobs too.
Yeah, they do. And so, that's a very important point.
Right. I'm never going to be that guy who's, I heard this already, but when, you know, we announced this morning that lawn care companies are going to get to go out and do some of the basics.
Yay.
And someone wrote to me and said, well, they're not essential. Why are they out? Well, first of all, they're more essential than you think. Secondly, it's a very safe thing to do to send out one worker to work on your lawn. Aeration, weed control, lawn cutting, whatever. Right?
They feed their family because of it.
If it's safe,
yeah,
let them do it. I don't care how essential it is.
The other thing, tip more, by the way. When the pizza comes, I make sure I double what I might usually tip
Just, why? So you're going like with a full dollar?
No, close though.
75. No longer than two quarters.
You're 75.
Throwing the loony.
Yeah, don't throw me under the bus here.
No, you're a good tipper. I've had many dinners with you.
We're looking for special stories of people who are making a difference, and I'm loving the ones we're hearing. As this goes on and on, we need that, right? We met a woman by the name of Lori McPherson. I want you to hear this, Bill. She has been on the front lines at the Elmont Country Haven. We know 23 people have died there. What a horrible tragedy. Things are getting better. We're hearing that people are now recovering. Fingers crossed it will continue that way. But
you can tell the premier is still very concerned about what's going on in the seniors' homes. That's now ground zero for sure.
The numbers. Yeah, the numbers are coming out of there. Yeah. Worse in Quebec, though. 85% of the deaths are at the homes there. So I think it's 65 here. Not much better, but we'll take every little victory that we can. But imagine if your mother or your father is lying in there and you can't go in there when they're in their final moments of trying to struggle with COVID-19. That's what happened at the home in Elmont. Lori McPherson is her name. She's only been on the job, Bill, since April 1st. And on Saturday night, after a long shift of keeping up with all of the residents and patients, people who were sick, she asked if she could stay on because she knew that one of the patients wasn't going to make it. Listen to this.
I did my regular shift, 3 to 11, and we were pretty certain that this dear lady would pass that night. And I actually grew up with some of the family members. We grew up in Elmont together, and they remain friends today. But due to the situation of not being able to come in, I said I would stay with their mom, grandmom, until she had passed.
Imagine that.
There's some really beautiful people out there.
As so, you know, your family member, you can't get near them, but someone who you know, who's a friend of yours, who your mom or dad knows, and standing there by the bed, and she said to her, she named all her family members. So-and-so loves you. So-and-so loves you. They're out, they're thinking of you. I mean, these are the stories that will get us through this because you see that there are people like Lori McPherson. So I wanted to salute her this morning.
You know, let's also, you know, we talk a lot about the physical risk they're putting themselves in right now. The mental health risk, too. Don't kid yourself. You know, I like to tease Doris, my mother-in-law. I tell
her. To say the least.
And she lives up to most of those crazy stories.
Yep.
But she was a nurse through her entire career. And for a long time, she was a nurse who dealt with children.
Wow.
And she eventually had to stop doing that. She said, heartbreak after heartbreak after heartbreak.
I don't know how they
just
do it.
Yeah. Tearing her down. And I can tell you that my wife, you know her almost as well as I do and almost as long as I do. You know that she is one of the nicest, most generous, compassionate people around, involved in every charity, helps every friend. I think that's partly just inherited. But her mother would take her to sit with and read with all those children that she would look after when she was just a child herself. And it gave her an appreciation for how great it is to be just to be alive and how lucky that we all are just to have our health and how terrible life goes for a lot of people, including children. So there are good people out there.
Yeah.
And my mother-in-law, I hate to admit it, but she was one of them back in the day.
Noted. Back in the day. You didn't
Before
have to add that part.
To torture me for
Franchement, Bill.
Come on.
Hey, we also need to call out those who are dropping the ball. I'm going to go to Nova Scotia, where we know, of course, the horrible tragedy that unfolded there. Why didn't they sound the emergency alarm system? Why didn't the phones and the televisions go off? Instead, RCMP used Twitter, and we're hearing that, you know, lives could have been saved.
If not for this, then for what?
Exactly.
Really? I mean, if not now, what? We got a text when some kid went missing 2 days ago in Sudbury. They wake us up in Manitic at 3 a.m, and it probably is not going to do any good by then. Fine. I'd like to see us tweak it. Fine. I can live with that, but then we have a chance to save lives in real time when someone is out there posing as a police officer, killing people en masse, and they didn't use it then? They have a lot of explaining to do on that one.
Well, I asked former OPP commissioner and now CTV public security expert Chris Lewis. I said, look, we have false alarms when it comes to nuclear plant issues, and then we have an Amber Alert that is too late and then others that are too soon. And he admitted that, the system should be working by now.
Well, you know, you make a very good point, Leslie, in that every time it is used because a child has been abducted, and there's a serious issue for public safety to consider, people scream and holler and call 911 to complain. And, I mean, there's so much concern about when it is used, but it needs to be used. And so, you know, the best approach in these things is always, take RCMP Nova Scotia aside at this point, is to maximize the ability to communicate to the public. And Twitter and Facebook are two ways, but going through the broadcasters and going through the national alert system so that phones and TVs and radios and everything go out is the best way to do it, but it has to meet certain criteria. Did this one? We'll know over time as the RCMP wrestle this down and trying to understand what occurred.
I take issue with just one thing he said. I give people a little more credit than he's giving them, in that most of the complaints about the Amber Alert system have been because they used it in a way that it wasn't really going to be helpful, right? 3 a.m. when someone has been missing for 12 hours is too late.
It's thousands of miles away.
And a vehicle description isn't very helpful when you're lying in your bed at 3 a.m. and not part of the province miles away. So they need to tweak that because here's the danger. Because they've used it improperly, people are tuning it out, and maybe it led to a reluctance to use it in this situation. But I would not have been upset if I lived in Nova Scotia to get even at 2 a.m. Well, I would especially want it at 2 a.m. Because if I get that alert and 5 minutes later a cop knocks on my door, I'm going to behave in a very different way.
Well, that's that heartbreaking interview that happened yesterday with Lisa LaFlamme, where the guy was saying, you know what, I was texting with my wife, not knowing that this guy was dressed like a cop driving a cop car, saying, you know, if you see someone at the side of the road, don't stop, keep driving. Well, if you see a cop pulling you over, you're going to stop, right?
Of course.
If that information had come out there, this poor man who was in tears saying his wife was pregnant with their second child, she could still be alive if they'd got it right.
Yeah, could you imagine now you're being pulled over? You might slow down, show that you're not trying to run, and call the police yourself. Look, I'm being pulled over. Is this legit? Can you confirm that I should pull over right now?
Yeah, exactly.
Right? So you affect behavior immediately in a way that could have saved lives.
And here's something else that bothers me, and I want you to talk me down, because this guy, the gunman...
You're looking to me to talk anyone down?
I know. Well, this is how angry a lot of people are. This gunman, who we're not going to name, had a prior record for assault, Bill. He was prohibited from owning guns for 9 months. He had to attend anger management classes. My brother's mother-in-law had the building next to him in Halifax. He was a denturologist, or whatever they call him, denturist. And she tells the story. This is a very personal story my brother was telling me, where a woman was on the payment plan for dentures and couldn't make the last payment. And then she went in for a final checkup for the fitting and so on. He took them, dropped them on the floor, smashed them with his ankle, and said, come back when you can pay me in full. This is the kind of man this was. Why no red flags?
Meanwhile,
Bill?
He got all the attention for helping a cancer patient with their dentures.
Why no red flags when he started buying guns? Isn't that what we're supposed to? And I realize you can do harm with other things than guns, but if.
Well, for sure, and you know we're talking about more gun control. How about just enforcing the laws we already have?
That's exactly my point. I don't get into the gun control debate because you can't win that. But this is one thing where it slipped through the cracks. As to your point, they could have used some measures that are in place, and then maybe they could have seen something coming, and this could have been thwarted. That's the scary part. Hey, one last thing. This is another system failure. Those Canadian planes live, you know, on the ground in China waiting for tons and tons of PPEs, we learned yesterday. They came back empty, Bill. Why? Well, the minister was on with Evan yesterday, and he said because the pilots had no choice. China restricts the length of time that you can stay on the ground. I'm just assuming because the airports are so packed and they have to keep them moving and you can't sit at the gate, that the shipments were on their way, Bill, to the airplane somewhere in the city. And they had to take off because that was the rule. And they came back empty.
All I will say about that before I let you take over, because it's your own show, I will... China is kind of dead to me.
Yeah.
Be a long time. I will go out of my way now to avoid products made only in China.
Wow.
We've really found out who they are. They put their economy ahead of human lives when the outbreak happened. And look at the way they behave since. The defective gear that they're sending to hospital workers and this. You can't find a way to keep a plane on the ground a little longer. Park it over there until your life-saving equipment comes. Come on.
Just make the argument. You think the humans on the ground in China would say, no problem. So can we boycott China? Can we afford to do that?
Well, I'm going to start boycotting as much as I can. Well, I think we should. We better become a lot more self-reliant on this. This is not a condemnation of the Chinese people.
No.
You know, you have a cruel, vicious dictatorship. I don't know why we've gotten ourselves into bed with them so much before all of this happened. So this should wake us up. I hope it does.
Thank you, Bill. Talk to you tomorrow morning.
See ya.
We got a couple hours of great content for you this morning. Michael Landsberg, of course, you know him from TSN. He's also the leading guy in this country.